And if they do that, they move into allegorism, and there's no controls over the interpretive process. So there has to be a more concrete way of deciphering symbols. Let me give you the rules. Number one, search the immediate context. Dr. John Walvoord, in his commentary on Revelation, identifies 26 times where the symbol is interpreted right there in the very same context. So many times you run into a symbol, and if you just keep reading the passage, what you'll discover is that the symbol is interpreted in the passage itself. Now what if that doesn't work? Then and if you don't have an interpretation immediately, then what do? You search what I call the remote context. The remote context would be the Old Testament. Because you see, the book of Revelation has 404 verses in it. 278 of the 404 verses are allusions to the Old Testament. The book of Revelation is sort of interesting. It doesn't have any Old Testament verbatim quotes, but it has references or allusions constantly back to the Old Testament. And so if the book of Revelation is sort of a mystery to you and a fog, it may mean you don't know a lot about the Old Testament, because the more you understand the Old Testament, the more the book of Revelation starts to make sense. I mean, it is a book that is heavily dependent upon the Old Testament. So, and I got that little quote there from Robert Thomas, the 278 verses of the 404 are allusions to the Old Testament. Robert Thomas wrote an excellent two-volume set on the book of Revelation. So I believe the two best commentaries you can ever acquire, if you're down to your last shekel, and you really want to know what the best commentaries are in the book of Revelation, and these are not just for scholars, I believe these are accessible to lay people also, can benefit from these. I would get John Walvoord's commentary on Revelation, and then Robert Thomas's two-volume set, published by Moody Press, I think. And if you had those two commentaries, you'd be far ahead of the game in terms of a proper understanding of the book of Revelation. So let's take our two rules, shall we, and apply them to our three characters and see if we can identify what these characters are. Let's start with the sun, S-O-N, there in verse 5. Notice what it says. And she gave birth to a son, a male child who is to rule all of the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. So who is the son? Son is Jesus. How do I know that? Well, it doesn't say Jesus here in the passage, but the Old Testament tells me that the one who is going to rule with the rod of iron one day is Jesus Christ. Psalm 2 verse 9 says, "You shall break them with the rod of iron, you shall shatter them like earthenware." Beyond that, you'll notice that the Son, Jesus, is caught up to God and His throne. What historical event do you think that is? Probably the ascension. Acts 1:9 says, "After He had said these things, He was lifted up. While they were looking on, a cloud received Him out of their sight." So I think we're pretty confident that the Son there is none other than Jesus Christ. Now, it mentions there in verse 3, the dragon. Notice verse 3, it says, "In another sign," see, that's how we know we're dealing with symbols, because you keep seeing this word sign. "Another sign appeared in heaven, behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his head were 7 diadems. So who do you think the dragon is? The devil. Now how do I know that? Just keep reading the chapter and go down to verse 9. "The dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world." Over in Revelation 20 and verse 2, it says virtually the same thing, a passage we studied yesterday. Revelation chapter 20, verse 2, it says, "He laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan." So quite clearly, just by letting the book of Revelation interpret itself and being patient with the book and not just leaping to conclusions, but letting the book interpret itself, we can identify the dragon as none other than the devil. The most difficult symbol to identify probably is the woman in verse 1. Notice what Revelation 12:1 says. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor pain, to give birth. Now, sadly, many commentators look at this and they say this woman is the church. There's a lot of problems with that. First of all, the woman is giving birth to Jesus. Did the church give birth to Jesus? No, it's the other way around, isn't it? Jesus gave birth to the church. Beyond that, the woman is pregnant, and I thought the church was supposed to be a virgin, so we have a little slight problem there, don't we? So a far better explanation is not to identify the woman as the church. Now, Revelation 12 doesn't identify who this woman is, so what do you suggest we do? We go where? Into the Old Testament. So go back, if you could, to Genesis 37 and verses 9 and 10. See, if you know the Joseph story, you've got some bells going off in your head. I've heard that before. Genesis 37, verses 9 and 10, this is Joseph. I believe he's about, 17 years old at this time, and he has a dream. And in this dream, God gives him a glimpse of what his future would be, what he would do for God. And it says this, now he still had another dream, and related it to his brothers, and said, lo, I have had another dream. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars. Does this sound familiar at all? It's the exact same imagery in Revelation 12. Now, Revelation 12 has 12 stars. And we're going to learn in a minute that the stars are Joseph's brothers. And Genesis 37:9 says 11 stars because Joseph is narrating the dream, but he's one of the 12. Lo, I have still had another dream, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. He related it to his father. Who's his father? Jacob. And to his brothers. Because he was so open about what God was going to do with him, this provoked jealousy in his brothers, did it not? And this is why they actually, you know, left him in a ditch for dead and how he got sold down into Egypt and so forth. But he related it to his father and to his brothers, and his father rebuked him. You stupid 17-year-old, what do you know? Sort of attitude. His father rebuked him and said, what is this dream you have had? Now, Jacob starts to interpret the imagery. Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come down to bow down ourselves before you to the ground? So in Jacob's interpretation, the sun, now we're talking about S-U-N, sun, is Jacob. The moon is Mrs. Jacob, which most people say, well, that's Rachel. The problem is Rachel's dead in Genesis 35. And you'll recall that Jacob had two wives, Rachel and Leah. So I would guess that the moon represents Leah, Jacob's surviving spouse. And then who do these 12 stars represent? Jacob's sons, Joseph being one of the 12. And they became, I heard it down here somewhere, the 12 tribes of Israel. So you look at Genesis 37, 9 and 10, and the imagery of the sun and the moon and the 12 stars is clearly a reference to the nation of Israel. So the sun is Jacob, the moon is Leah, the 11 stars are Joseph's brother, the 12 star is Joseph, and the 12 stars represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And it's a vision that was fulfilled mostly when Joseph reached the age of 30, about 13 years later. And you know the Joseph story where he was elevated second in command in Egypt and his family came to him to seek grain in the midst of famine. And that's actually how the Lord got the nation of Israel out of Canaan. Had God left them in Canaan, they would have been internally corrupted by the wickedness of the Canaanites.